Welcome to the BBB National Programs Podcast, The Bistro, where we will discuss today's hottest consumer trends, predict the future with consumer experts, and learn how elite businesses and entrepreneurs continue to push the envelope to meet and shape the consumer's needs in the marketplace.
Hello and welcome to the Bistro Podcast. I'm your host, Elena Spinola. Today we're going to talk about privacy. Joining us in the studio is Coben Zweifel-Keegan from BBB EU Privacy Shield and John Brescia from the Digital Advertising Accountability Program. Both programs are part of the BBB National Programs. Now, we've talked privacy before, but we wanted to take a more expansive look at the topic, especially in regards to the EU and the US and their differing approaches on the subject. So why the EU? Well, in 2018, GDPR came into effect. Let's get started. John, Coben, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, this is going to be a great discussion. And Coben, can you start off, for those who aren't familiar, what is GDPR?
Well, GDPR, the General Data Protection Regulation, like you said, came into effect last year. It's a regulation, so it that differs in the EU from a directive, which is what it replaced. It has binding authority over all of the EU member states, and it is their set of privacy rules that protect personal information of people in the EU that companies and governments collect and use about them. So it provides a bunch of rules for the types of rights and responsibilities that consumers have in the EU and that businesses have that are doing business there. It's a little bit different than the US in that it's based in the fundamental rights of EU citizens. There's an idea in the Europe that privacy is a fundamental right, and because of that, the GDPR establishes it sort of expands on that right by providing EU consumers with redress options, with the ability to bring complaints through their local regulatory agencies, and the ability to actually ask businesses for copies of their personal information, for to delete personal information, stuff like that.
Got it. So essentially, this gives consumers more power when it comes to their privacy.
Yes, definitely.
Did you say that? Yeah. And then you mentioned it's different than a directive. So this is law now across the EU.
Yeah, exactly. It's different from the directive, which was in place since like 1995, in that a directive has to be implemented by each member state. So what happens is you get a little bit more like a patchwork. Mm-hmm. It ends up being slightly different in each member state, but a regulation has binding authority immediately.
Got it. So all things equal.
Across the EU.
Mm-hmm, got exactly. It. Okay. And so, Coben, your work also involves something called Privacy Shield, another European thing. Am I correct? And how does this tie into GDPR, if at all?
Yeah, it definitely ties into GDPR. So Privacy Shield is the bilateral agreement between the US and the EU that allows for the transfer of personal information from the EU to the US. So it's only one mechanism. There's a few different ways that you have to legally transfer personal information to the US. But because the US doesn't have the same protections as the EU, one of the rules in GDPR is that you can only transfer personal information to a country that has adequacy, that has adequate, what are deemed to be adequate data protection rules.
Sure.
And when I say data protection, it's basically synonymous with privacy. People in the field Europeans in the field might kill me for saying that, but from a U.S. perspective, data protection is synonymous with what we think of as privacy, at least, especially from a company perspective of protecting people's information, making sure that only the right people have control of it. So my work in Privacy Shield is the BBB runs a IRM, an independent recourse mechanism. Mm-hmm. So when companies sign up to be under Privacy Shield, they have to pick a dispute resolution mechanism, and that's what BBB offers them through the BBB EU Privacy Shield program. Once they're signed up with us, they also sign up with the Department of Commerce, and then they're able to they put a bunch of things in their privacy policy that sort of match the GDPR requirements, but they're not exactly what's in GDPR. Sure. They're more what's in this agreement under Privacy Shield.
Got it.
And the reason it's in their privacy policy is so that it can be enforceable here in the U.S.
Got it. I mean, you mentioned the first thing you mentioned is, again, we don't kind of have this similar regulation or law here in the U.S. And John, I know you usually work with the U.S.-facing market. How do GDPR and Privacy Shield compare to privacy laws here in the United States?
Sure. So, Elaine, thanks for having me again. Good to be back.
It's great having you back. Yeah. It's your wealth of knowledge. Thank you.
Well, don't oversell it.
Never.
So when it comes to differences between the EU and the U.S., the place to start is just sort of fundamentally how those structures view privacy. So in the EU, privacy is considered a fundamental human right, and that differs from the U.S. approach over the past 50, 60 years, which has been to view privacy fundamentally in terms of regulation as a commercial activity. So privacy is what is your right as a consumer,
mm-hmm.
right, in a given commercial context. And so we've had, as a result, instead of general sweeping laws that encompass everything, a number of sectoral laws, as they're called, that govern different sectors of the economy. And so you've got something that everybody's probably familiar with, HIPAA.
Mm-hmm.
The point with HIPAA is that it is not meant primarily as a privacy rule to govern medical data. It's actually extremely narrow about entities that are doing third-party insurance billing. You know, these entities, when somebody is using a doctor's office, for example, to get a diagnosis for a medical issue, you know, you've got all these narrow little paths that you've got to trace to trigger this HIPAA rule
mm-hmm.
that then governs what you can do with that information. But at the same time, you go to some sort of fitness tracker, let's say. Put one of those on your arm. You get an app and you're tracking your runs, your walks. That's not HIPAA-covered data in virtually any context unless there's some sort of special medical nexus in your case. But the consumer use of it, not covered. And so these are much narrower laws that we have here. And with one, I think the force of GDPR and also Brazil's data protection law, and there's a trend sort of moving around the world toward more general data protection rules, that pressure is being applied bit by bit to the United States. And we've seen it start to change in two ways. The first way is the state of California,
mm-hmm.
and there are other state efforts that we could talk about, but California is the most robust because it actually exists. There are others, Nevada and such, but California is the big one. And then federal law. So start with California. This will be a 2-second summary. California had a ballot initiative on the ballot in 2018 that then, through some last-minute bargaining, became an actual bill that was passed into law by the state legislature, signed into law, and now has some draft regs out from the attorney general of that state.
Mm-hmm.
And it is based in a more human rights notion of this. It's still very economic in its particulars, but it at least claims to draw from the California Constitution's human rights, essentially, that you have as a resident of California, one of which is the right to privacy. And on the federal side, there's musings about whether California is not enough or too much, and debates about whether we want to preempt a patchwork of state laws that might be difficult to comply with altogether, that might be somewhat contradictory. And that's all very speculative right now. And, mm-hmm. and there is no federal law that's really up for debate at this point. There are a billion proposals, and not one of them seems to have full traction at this point. And
sure.
Given the state of Congress, good luck with that.
Right. Now, I think you shared a little bit about how the perspectives between the EU and the U.S. are different. One question we have here is, can one country mandate another country to comply? How are the networks architected?
So that's really difficult. You have a number of overlapping things when it comes to data flows moving around the world. So you've got questions of who's the user and where are they located? Where are the companies located? What jurisdictions are they in? Do they have vendors? Where does the information transit through? Where does it get stored? And so it sort of depends on the specific fact pattern really at issue. But it could be that you end up with multiple countries involved. And it, you know, this is somewhat unrelated, I think, to our day-to-day here. But you're thinking back to the Cloud Act from, now, I guess, a couple of years ago. This was an issue where, you know, Microsoft was being asked by law enforcement. This is a non-commercial situation, but being asked to provide information that resided in a different country. And they said, well, you can't request that because it doesn't exist here. You don't have the power to compel us in this jurisdiction to do some search over there because the search is happening overseas, and that would violate X, Y, and Z rules. And this went up to the Supreme Court, and it got mooted. The Supreme Court never got to decide it because Congress said, oh, okay, we'll smooth all of this out. And they rapidly passed some legislation sort of setting out the rules by which and the procedures by which countries, in this case the U.S. and it was Ireland, can deal with this sort of data search, data sharing arrangement for law enforcement purposes. And we had things called mutual legal assistance treaties that sort of also touch on this. But so it's really complicated, and it can involve multiple nation state actors, you know, giant corporations all over the data, perhaps of a single person that's residing in a server somewhere. And so it's quite complex.
Yeah, and that's not really anything that's new in terms of, I mean, that we've always had global trade for a long time and lots of these kinds of issues of laws running up against each other and countries having to figure this out. But nowadays, I think we're seeing so many companies that are operating in a lot of different countries. And that does create these interesting conflicts, questions. I think even for smaller companies that maybe are just doing business in the, like, for example, in the EU and the US, you have, they're still transferring that data between those jurisdictions. And so, yeah, there's just, it becomes, the compliance burden becomes a little bit more, a little bit higher for those companies as they try to navigate those waters.
And I understand. I mean, the enforcement and the penalties are pretty stiff. Maximum, I think, 20 million euro, something like that. I don't know if that's correct, but you touched on this a little bit, but how are the companies in general responding to GDPR?
When companies are trying to comply with GDPR and align their practices with it, especially U.S. companies we're talking about here is more my expertise. I'm not sure. I don't have as many connections with people in the EU who are trying to do this. So European companies complying. But the main requirement under GDPR, like I mentioned, is to provide those rights to consumers. So that involves a number of things, both providing sort of a mechanism for consumers to assert those rights. So you have to be able to have a place where consumers can go to say, I want to delete my information.
Sure.
Or what are the instructions for me to reach out to you when I want to assert my rights? And then sort of more fundamentally, you have to have all of the operational things in the background to be able to actually give those people what they were asking for. So you have to figure out in your systems where is personal information stored. And this sort of goes back to privacy best practices that have been around for a really long time, well before the GDPR and even before the directive. There's been sort of an establishment over the past, since the 1960s, of a set of practices and procedures that are considered to be industry standard, and that includes with regard to personal information, and that includes sort of knowing where you have the information. This is what privacy is about, is where, what systems internally do you store personal information in, who has access to it, and then who are you sharing it with, what is your deletion protocol, stuff like that. So that sort of data mapping that has to take place, that's one of the biggest asks of companies that haven't already implemented some of those best practices.
Got it. Okay. You mentioned the individuals and the consumers. Let's have a quick discussion about those individuals in the EU. How are they responding to these new legal rights? And then, John, if you could follow up and tell us, how does this differ with consumers and their concerns in the United States?
So, yeah, individuals in the EU, I think, are becoming more and more aware of these rights because the GDPR has come into effect. I think we've seen a surge in the number of people bringing complaints, asking to assert their rights. I think Google has the best statistics on this when they talk about right to be forgotten requests, which are essentially takedown requests. They've seen a massive surge. It continues to go up and up, and they're dealing with thousands of those a day. So EU consumers are becoming more aware and asserting their rights both under GDPR and under Privacy Shield, with some U.S. businesses under Privacy Shield. And that's actually what my program does, is handle those complaints. If the company didn't respond to the consumer adequately, they can come to the IRM program and ask for the IRM to step in. And we perform a dispute resolution process to make sure to make everyone happy there.
Sure, sure. John, how does this differ with consumer concerns in the U.S.?
Sure. So, you know, I'll just say from a programmatic standpoint, the program that I operate, the Digital Advertising Accountability Program, we do take consumer complaints. And so we've got a pretty decent sense, I guess, of popular sentiment in a lot of ways. You know, our process is sort of less formal than the one in Privacy Shield, but it actually gets a tremendous number of complaints every year. And we have, since we started the program, in the thousands each year. And we, by the way, respond by hand to everybody who gives us contact information to respond back. So, you know, if you've got a problem, you can find our complaint form online and get in touch with us. But what we've seen over the years is a growth in the sophistication of the complaints. By and large, when I started doing these, say, 6 years ago or so, people had a lot of general complaints about the internet or a lot of general complaints about advertising. Those persist. But there's been a small number that's grown over the years of people who have really pinpoint questions. I wanted to opt out of this particular company's, you know, interest-based advertising practices, like we talked about in the last episode. And they try and it doesn't seem to work. And then they provide us with their list of seven troubleshooting steps that they took and said, but why doesn't it still work? And there's almost always a good answer buried in the browser settings or in their routers, for example. They could be on a corporate network. That's one of the more common ones where when everything else seems exhausted, it turns out your corporate firewall doesn't like this traffic and is shutting it down. So,
got it. So it sounds like consumers are becoming a little bit more savvier when it comes to privacy.
Absolutely.
In the United States. Got it. I was going to ask you about CCPA, but you talked about it a little bit earlier. And I'm going to say that whether the U.S. follows suits with a federal law on consumer privacy similar to GDPR, that is left to be seen in the future, right? So we'll have to follow up. We'll have to follow up with you, John, on that down the road here. As we wrap up here, with all of this swirling around, what's a business to do? You know, what should they be aiming at? And then you did share what the BBBNP does to aid in efforts around privacy and data collection. We'll ask you for your websites again, but just real quick, what's a business to do?
So, I mean, I guess the first step is call your lawyer.
Oh.
So honestly, taking stock of what you're doing right now is the most important first step. Seeing what data you collect, what you hold, how you use it, making sure you've got reasons for all of these things, and then starting to set up policies and procedures to govern all of those things in compliance with whatever regime it is that you're trying to comply with, whether it's a very high bar, best practices sort of standard beyond even the law, or whether it's specific things like GDPR, CCPA.
Got it. Colin, anything to add there?
Yeah, I totally second everything that he said. I think, it really is a function of embracing those best practices and making it part of the day-to-day, which is not it's not something that's necessarily easy to implement. And one good thing about things like GDPR and CCPA is it takes, it gives some pressure that if you're within the organization trying to get people to embrace these best practices and incorporate it into business processes, it's easier to sell it to the C-suite now if there's big possible fines on the horizon.
Absolutely.
For people that don't comply.
Yeah. Well, here at the Bistro, we are all about discussing better business. So I'm going to third everything you both said. And I want to thank you both so much for joining us today and helping us just dive through this conversation. John Coben, where can our listeners find more information like what we discussed here today?
On bbbnp.org is where both of our programs information is You can find everything from there.
Can you?
I think so.
Good.
Check it out. Look it up. Let us know what you think. Thank you again both so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Sure. I'm Elena Spinola, host of the Bistro Podcast. We thank you for listening. And hey, if you haven't already, subscribe to the Bistro on iTunes. Go ahead, rate and review us. Let us know what you think. And please share our episodes to help inform and inspire others. Until next time, it has been my pleasure discussing better business and privacy with you.
You just enjoyed the Bistro Podcast. Be sure to tune in next time for a brand new episode. To learn more about our other shows, visit betterbusiness.blueberry.com. That's betterbusiness.blueberry.com. Follow us on Twitter at @BBB_NTL programs. Send your comments and ideas to podcast@BBBNP.org. The thoughts and opinions expressed on this podcast are the views and opinions of the guests, not those of the BBB National Programs or its affiliates. This podcast is for information and educational purposes only and is copyrighted with all rights reserved. This podcast is protected by Blueberry's Terms of Service.